This is Billy Brim and the Voice of One Witness radio broadcast coming to you today from my home in Branson, Missouri. We are reading from a book that I helped edit for Dr. Lester Sumrall in 1980. Its title is Jihad, the Holy War, the Destiny of Iran and the Muslim World. We're picking up today from Muhammad's Revelations. Muhammad heard voices. They came to him not once or twice, but over a period of 23 years. He claimed the angel Gabriel dictated the Quran to him word by word. The Quran, according to Muhammad, annuls the Bible. He declared that the Bible was corrupted by both Jews and Christians and not reliable. Muhammad said in the Quran that Gabriel transmitted Islam's teachings undefiled, unmatched, and uncreated. He said they existed in heaven from the beginning. The Quran has 114 surahs, or chapters. It contains 77,639 words. In the surah 98, verses 5 through 7, Muhammad, it's written in Roman numerals, so I have to figure it out. Muhammad taught that Christians, Jews, and idolaters are the worst of all created beings, and that Muslim believers are the best of all created beings. In the surah 4:14 and 29 and 4:84 and 101, Muhammad taught that love is not as important as obedience or submission. The Quran strictly teaches its followers to love their own believers but not disbelievers. It encourages Muslims to wage a war, jihad, against non-Muslims in the name of Islam. To kill a non-Muslim is justifiable. What is not permitted is to kill a believer, unless by mistake, in which case blood money must be paid to the victim's family. Muhammad made polygamy a way of life. He gave Muslims permission to have 4 wives, although he himself had 10 wives. He said this was through special permission from Allah. Incidentally, after Khadijah died, within a year, Muhammad married 3 more wives. One had been the wife of his adopted son, another was a Jewish woman, the third was a Coptic Christian. Muhammad certainly must have heard the Old and New Testament stories from these women. His Quran contains Bible stories terribly twisted. Muhammadism teaches that Satan does not affect man's relationship with Allah. Neither does the Adamic nature of the human transmit sin to its offspring. Muhammadism teaches that man is born sinless, that man has a tendency to sin. However, he has the ability to rise above his sins. It is not man's relationship with God as much as it is the believer's relationship with other believers that is of great significance. Bloodshed, a way to sell a new religion. The first person Muhammad convinced of his new religion was his wife Khadijah. His nephew Ali was the second. Many Muslims today are named after this Ali, who became a strong supporter of Muhammad and his ideas and was one of the first leaders of the new religion. Muhammad had a difficult time teaching his new religion. He was persecuted and driven from his native Mecca to Medina. His flight is called the Hijra. He gathered his faithful around him and taught them that the only way to win the world to Allah was by force with the sword. The forceful overthrow of the government of Medina came in 622 AD, the same year he arrived. The city was converted to Islam, except for some Jews and a few Christians, and Muhammad became its ruler as well as its religious high priest. The former camel driver turned prophet, priest, ruler, lawgiver, and judge also became commander-in-chief of Jihad's first armed forces. He attacked Mecca, defeated its army, destroyed its idols, and established the new religion of Islam. Medina and Mecca, where it all started, are the most holy places of the Confederation. As the Jews taught Muhammad to face Jerusalem to pray, he taught his followers to face Mecca to pray. At the time of his death, Muhammad had united almost all Arabia politically and religiously under Muslim control. And he had turned his thoughts toward Persia and the world. After his death, the enthusiasm of Muhammadism began to rise in fanatical fury. Those near him were determined to carry on his cause. They captured area after area and planted the crescent and the new religion of Islam. Islam's leaders were fierce and uncompromising. To obey them was to die. In less than 25 years, Muhammad's followers had captured Persia, Syria, Palestine, which is Israel, and Egypt. In less than 75 years, they had taken North Africa and had entered Europe through Spain. It was only by a miracle of God that Charles Martel defeated the Muslims at the Battle of Tours in 732 AD and stopped the progress of Mohammedism in Europe. Mohammedism had become the dominant power of the Mediterranean world. Its realm of influence stretched from the Atlantic Ocean to the borders of China, encompassing all the great empires of past history. During the 7th and 8th century, Islam moved westward into Central Asia. Irresistibly, century after century, it gained converts until most of northern India had fallen before its sword. In the 15th and 16th centuries, Islam moved toward the far east into Java, Sumatra, and other islands, including the Philippines. All of the bloodshed was justifiable in the name of jihad. One of Islam's greatest leaders was Abu Bakr, who immediately followed Muhammad into leadership. He wrote to cities and countries of Arabia to become subservient to the new religion. He sent his followers into Syria to take out of the hands of the infidels the powers of state and religion. He told them, quote, "And I would have you know that fighting for religion is an act of obedience to Allah." The first Syrian city he conquered was Basra. You have heard about Basra in Iraq in the Middle East. The first city, it's been again in the news. The first Syrian city he conquered was Basra. A man named Romanus was the leader of this city. The invaders caused him to say publicly these words, "I deny him that was crucified, and whosoever worships him. I choose God for my Lord, Allah for my Lord, Islam for my faith, Mecca for my temple, and Muslims for my brethren, and Muhammad for my prophet." This is quoted from The History of Nations by Lodge, page 418. Islam and Iran. When the Islamic religion invaded Iran, possibly the hardest persecuted were the Zoroastrians. When Islam became the state religion, its leaders slowly persecuted the Christians and other dissenters. It assessed them extra taxes. It forbade Christians to make converts. It refused Christians the permission to display the cross at all. Persecution varied by the provinces and also by the rulers of them. In the early history of Iran, the church had prospered under kings such as Sasanians from 224 AD to 642 AD. The city of Shush was the center of Christianity, but with the coming of Mohammedism, they were overwhelmed. By the time Genghis Khan, the Mongol monarch, marched across Iran in the middle 1200s, the church was almost eliminated. The remnant fled to the mountains in western Iran, and the church never knew strength again in that land. Christianity today in Iran, now he's writing in 1980, the largest professing group of Christians in Iran are the Armenians, possibly 160,000 of them. These Armenians date back to the first century. They are a closely knit people who mostly intermarry. The book Christians in Persia states that in the year 1624, Shah Abbas passed a law that any Christian who became a Muslim could claim the property of any of his relatives back to at least four generations. It was said that possibly 50,000 Christians renounced their faith in order to get property. Very few of these were Armenians. Holy places, price of non-evangelism. Maybe the strongest thing we could say in this book is that the Jews had ample time and place to win Muhammad to their religion. In this they failed. What they did not know was that the day would come when a Mohammedan mosque, the Mosque of Omar, would be erected. The Mosque of Omar and the Dome of the Rock would be erected on the very site of Solomon's Temple. Rather than the prayers of the Jews being heard in that place, there would be prayers to Allah. To the Jews, one of the most sacred spots on earth is Hebron, where Abraham lived, where the angels talked to him at his front door, and the cave of Machpelah, where Abraham, Isaac, and buried and their wives are buried. But the Mohammedans built a mosque over it. Prayers are still screamed there from the minaret several times a day. What a tremendous reminder that if we do not win sinners to Christ, they will turn and destroy us. I have so often wondered what a different world we would have if some Christian in Austria had won Adolf Hitler to the Lord Jesus Christ. It would have saved 50 million people from destructions. Christians, too, had ample opportunity to win Muhammad. He met many of them in his travels. One result is that possibly the most sacred place on earth for the Christians is the top of Mount Calvary. It's a Muslim cemetery. Few Christians ever walk on that mountain. There is now a Muslim bus station there. I've been there often. This bus station was not built until the 1950s, but it's the very place where our Lord was crucified. World dominance. A Muslim leader recently said, now listen to this, and consider how far ahead of his time. Shouldn't have been ahead of his time. Everybody should have known it. But Lester did know it. World dominance. A Muslim leader recently said, quote, unless we win London to Islam, we will fail to win the whole of the Western world. The whole of the Western world is the ambition of the Muslim world. In London, there are some 300,000 Muslims today. There are many more now, but that was in 1980. They have 33 mosques scattered over the city. The Central Mosque and Islamic Cultural Center was built recently in Regent's Park in London at a cost of $7.5 million. Folks, that Regent's Park that Lester named, that was the place that Al-Qaeda used to recruit in the early days of Al-Qaeda. Is it possible, Lester writes, that the nations of the West have not yet begun to realize the confrontation that is before them? For jihad is the religious duty of the world's Muslims. Of course, one of the darkest times in history was the time of the Crusades. Lester goes into those. We're not going to go into that tomorrow. We're going to begin with 20th century jihad. And of course, Lester wrote the book in the 20th century, 1980. But we want to look at it, and we want to remember this thing. He's going to go into the future, and he's going to talk about jihad against America. But we definitely want to remember this thing that we need to come against, this bad agreement. For the Iranians, the ones who are in power, we're going to read about how they got in power. We're going to read about that tomorrow, and it's in the book. They, on the very day that we signed this terrible agreement with them, they marched in their streets and said, death to America. And their spiritual leader, who is the real power, said, we're not going to change our ways of actions toward America. They call us the great Satan. They call Israel the small Satan. They definitely believe it's time for their Mahdi, their Messiah, to come. And so you can gain a lot of information, though this book was written in 1980, you can gain a lot of information from it by ordering it from us. I don't know what price they'll charge you, because I don't know what price we're going to have to pay for these. They're still being shipped in. But just call 1-800-972-3447. That's 1-800-972-3447. And request your copy of Jihad, The Holy War by Dr. Lester Sumrall. Also, you might want my little mini book, The Judgment of the Nations for How They Treat Israel. It's a small little book. I don't know how much it'll be. It won't cost you much. But we're going to be back here tomorrow to finish all that I can out of the book, and so that you can know about jihad, the holy war. Shalom.